This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
There is the opportunity for the government to come forward with additional funding between now and November, and which is November, December is when they normally announce the sort of funding. But what you just said there, 120 to 130 million, is the sort of numbers that I would expect the incoming administration to have to find in the 2026-27 budget.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, your go-to source for insightful discussions on local and national political matters. Join us as we take a deep dive into local government across the county. Find out what the key decision makers have to say, what your money is being spent on, and how the party's policies could affect how we live. Plus, don't miss our regular feature, Westminster Watch, where we dissect the latest developments and decisions shaping the political landscape in the heart of the UK's capital. Engage with us as we delve into the issues that matter to you and explore the dynamic world of politics from a Kent perspective.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast. In the week, the Chancellor was in the county to talk about 20,000 extra Kent children getting free school meals. KCC was given a hard no by the government to its request to extend the local government reorganisation discussion. And Labour MPs rebelled against the government's welfare bill reform. I'm Simon Finley, the local democracy reporter for KCC, and I'm joined by Robert Boddy, who reports on Medway Council.
Hello.
And senior editor Matt Ramsden, who will be talking about Kent Online's politics coverage.
Hello.
And this week's special guest is Harry Rayner, who has taken over as leader of the Tory group at KCC following his party's historic defeat to Reform UK last month. So, Rob, what have you been looking at this week at Medway?
This week, the towns were visited by the second most, or depending on your perspective, arguably the first most important person in the country, in the shape of Chancellor Rachel Reeves, who came to Inspire Partnerships Elaine Primary School in Strood to talk about the expansion of eligibility for free school meals, which will see an additional 20,000 children in Kent able to join the scheme.
So you got to meet the Chancellor. What did she have to say about this?
She said the government was committed to helping working people and the additional support would amount to £500 per child in parents' pockets and bring 100,000 children across England out of poverty. I asked her about criticism that it wasn't going far enough to tackle other issues of deprivation, which are particularly prevalent in the area of Strood that she was visiting, and this is what she had to say.
We introduced free school meals, rolling out breakfast clubs, increasing the national living wage and national minimum wage, reduced hospital waiting lists by 250,000, rebuilding our schools and our hospitals. But we can't do everything straight away. We have inherited public finances that are in a mess and public services that are on their knees. But we are steadily improving the living standards for working people. Four cuts in interest rates since the general election, taking money off of people's mortgages and rents. And all this adds up to a government that is determined to improve living standards for ordinary working people and improve the public services that they rely on, particularly our health service.
She visited Medway on the morning after the amendment, which aims to block the government's benefits changes, saw 108 Labour MPs, enough to defeat the government, signatures. So she might have had other things on her mind, but she did say that even if the government's plans were voted down, she would not resign. One other thing, the local plan in Medway is coming up this week, so please check Kent Online for all the latest updates on the discussions around that. So, Simon, what have you been up to this week?
A request by the new Reform UK leadership at Kent County Council, the leader, Lynn Kim-Caron, asked for a delay to the first stage of the local government reorganisation, and that's been turned down by the government. Lyndon Kim-Caron told me that she has been verbally given a hard no from the minister driving the changes, which will see KCC and all the other councils abolish themselves and replace them by a smaller number of much larger unitary authorities. There has to be an agreed plan with all the councils by November this year, and Reform asked for an extension to late March next year instead.
Why did she ask for the delay?
Well, the leader was trying to impress on the minister, Jim McMahon, that as a new, brand new administration, more time would be needed to engage with the public, and claimed it might be almost impossible, her words, to turn it around in that time, given there will be a long summer break in between.
And what was Mr. McMahon's response?
Well, it was pretty unequivocal. He's quite clear that the timeframes are adequate to come up with a plan to be agreed by all the counties in England which are undergoing these fundamental changes. So, yes, as she said, it was a hard no. But equally, given that the government is so unpopular and suffering at the hands of Reform UK, it's difficult to imagine Labour will be in any hurry to help Reform make a decent job of it from a political point of view, but perhaps it's a slightly cynical view. Okay, Matt, thanks for coming in today. You want to talk about Kent Online's politics coverage?
Yes, that's right, Simon. I wanted to come on the podcast today to briefly talk about KM Group's coverage, which I can honestly say has never been better.
Well, that's good to hear. Tell us more.
Yeah, as regular listeners will know, we had three reporters from the local democracy reporting services. That's yourself, that's Rob, and it's Dan Essen, who covers borough and district councils here in Kent. It's been such a big year in the world of Kent politics. First, with so many MPs being returned to Westminster with the general election, and then we've had KCC taken over by Reform and the Tories being almost wiped out. There's been so much happening. And all this has helped feed into our fantastic coverage from across the county on the following platforms. We've got a special politics section on Kent Online, which has all the very latest news, a weekly politics newsletter, which goes out every Friday, this podcast, which has a fascinating guest every week, and also the KMTV politics show each Friday evening.
So why is it important to provide all of this, Matt?
Well, covering politics and politicians is massively important. As we all know, the stuff that they do has a direct impact on our readers' lives. We take this responsibility really seriously. And at this point, I'd like to bring in Robert, who did us all proud last week when he was named New Journalist of the Year at the Kent Press and Broadcast Awards. Rob, well done, and tell us all about your entry.
Thanks, Matt. Well, I was quite surprised to win, to be honest, but obviously very pleased. I entered into the New Journalist category, where you have to submit three stories, and Medway is quite an active area, so there's plenty of stories to choose from. The options I went with were about a story which I discussed on the podcast a little while ago, which was about a young disabled boy who needed a new walker, but Medway Council wasn't going to pay for it. Another one was about the 10th anniversary of the Rochester and Strood by-election, which saw the election of Mark Reckless in 2014. So obviously it was very pleasing to win this award, and hopefully do more good work in the future.
Yeah, well done, Rob. There'll be more details at the end of this episode on how people can sign up to the newsletter.
Okay, thanks, Matt, and well done, Robert.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
Just 2 months ago, Harry Rayner was sitting at the top table of the Kent County Council as a Deputy Cabinet Member for Finance. He was one of 57 Conservative members at KCC at the time. And then May the 1st happened. Councillor Rayner is now one of just five Tories left, and he's now leader of the Tory group, and he's agreed to speak to us today. Welcome, Harry Rayner.
Hello, Simon. Good afternoon.
Thanks for agreeing to come on. Harry, what on earth happened on May the 1st?
Well, it's a really good question, and one that has occupied not a little of my time since. But basically, I think the electorate were and are really cheesed off with politics in general. And I have to say, Kent was not alone. It was one of 10 or more local councils across the country, including almost all of the Shire counties that were up for election at that time. And I have to say that it was, in my view, adversely impacted by the fact that it was the only county in the southeast that went for election. All the others were held back by Angela Rayner, and they, such as the two Sussexes, East and West Sussex, Surrey, Hampshire, Essex, and of course, to some degree, Suffolk and Norfolk as well. They were reorganising somewhat differently. So Kent was very isolated, and the fact is it enabled the Reform Party to sweep the board, and it's quite clear that there's also a disillusion both at local and national level with politics in general.
Okay. We'll come back to local government reorganisation in a little while, but you know the place. You've been there for a while. You're one of the few to survive from the Conservative group, but how do you assess the scale of the task in front of Reform UK at the County Council?
Oh, they have a really tough task. It would have been a tough task had the Conservatives got back as well. And I well know the financial measures that lie in wait. There are very, very significant savings. Straight off the bat, £85 million in the for the 26-27 financial year in savings. More so now, since both the Chancellor, the previous weekend, and Angela Rayner earlier this week announced a reconfiguration of local government finance, which effectively will take resources away from the south and southeast and allocate them to the Midlands and the northern metropolitan seats and local councils there. To the detriment of the southern county councils in particular. And I would expect that to be somewhere between 10 and 15 million pounds on top of that 85 million I just mentioned.
And what about sort of overspend on, you know, things like adult social care and looking after vulnerable children? I mean, that seems to go up every year and there's an overspend on that. Is that on the top of what you just mentioned?
Yes, indeed. I would put to one side the situation with children's social services. They have, for the most part, over recent years, stayed within budget. There is an exception in SEND transport in particular.
Yeah, the public school transport, which has cost tens and tens of millions of pounds.
Absolutely. Although, you know, that has become under greater control. But you are right to point the finger at adult services. There is no question that there have been budget overruns. The Conservatives had already brought in outside auditors / consultants to look at ways of getting on a grip on that. And that was the case when I effectively came out of office in early April to run for the campaign. Mm-hmm. The arrangements were being put in place for that. But at that time, and I guess continuing now, there will be significant budget overruns, I would estimate between 20 and 30 million pounds based on my previous experience.
Okay. So just doing very simple calculations in my head, we're talking about something 120 to 130 million pounds in your view will be required in savings, but in the 26 to 27 budget. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, that's right. You won't be far wrong there. This, of course, discounts any additional funding that may come from the government. But I'm not seeing that at the moment. There is the opportunity for the government to come forward with additional funding between now and November, and which is November, December is when they normally announce the sort of funding. But yeah, what you just said there, 120 to 130 million, is the sort of numbers that I would expect the incoming administration to have to find in the 2026-27 budget.
That'll be sobering for the reform lot, I'd imagine, when they realise that. There's been much written and reported about the so-called DOGE team, or the DOLGE team, the Department of Local Government Efficiency. And they've set a team into KCC to have a look to see if there's any waste or silly spending at KCC. But you were right on the inside, and you've seen the books, you know where the money's being spent. Is there anything really left to find that can be found?
Well, let's put it this way. All the low-hanging fruit has clearly been taken. There's no question. I mean, I effectively undertook the sort of search for efficiencies that the Doge or Dolge team is allegedly looking for. And some of the more senior members of Reform Party at KCC have indicated that there are some spectacular announcements to be made in early July, and I'll look forward to those with interest. As someone who, in the last administration, whose job it was to go and find the sort of savings that they're now looking for, I will look carefully at what they come forward with. I won't say that there aren't savings, but they're going to be relatively difficult to find, and they will take time to put into effect. And in particular, the sort of budget overruns and the reason for those budget overruns. Runs the sheer call and weight on social services that is really difficult with an aging population as we have. You have a situation with the baby boom generation now well into retirement, and those are the impact of those on the KCC social services budget, adult social services budget, is growing exponentially, no question.
Okay. Harry, let's take you back a little bit. You know, when did your interest in politics and particularly the Conservative Party start?
I go back a really donkey's years now, to the mid-1980s. I would say it started in 1984 when with a miner strike. I worked for a shipping company that that brought in a huge, in fact, it was probably the largest importer of coal, acting for importers bringing coal into the UK through smaller, what were then known as unregistered ports and unregistered wharves. And as a result of that, I was approached by someone in the village where I live and invited to join the Conservative Party and support Mrs. Thatcher even further, which and I joined the local parish council in 1984 and subsequently was asked in 1985 to stand as the Tunbridge and Morling councillor for Rootham, and I succeeded at election, majority 36. And then spent the next 10 or 11 years on Tunbridge and Morling Borough Council. And from there, I went on to the Kent Association of Local Councils and as vice chairman. And subsequently, some 8 years or more ago now, I was asked to stand as the local Kent County Councillor. I'm pleased to say I succeeded.
Looking at the situation today, I mean, what have the Conservatives and the Labour Party done so very wrong that has made them so unpopular at the minute?
I think the overriding situation has been, especially in the case of the Conservatives, to promise to cut immigration numbers and to actually do the opposite, to pay lip service to reducing immigration and not actually delivering on it. Not only not delivering on it, but actually doing the complete opposite. And I have to say there is nothing. If you look at the local situation in Kent, I would say that most of the local administration has been very competent. And we'll see whether or not that the existing standard that was there is actually delivered by reform. Certainly, I intend to make sure that whatever they bring forward by way of policies and spending plans is very carefully scrutinised, and with my financial background in the previous administration, I'm in a good position to do that.
Well, why do you think that reform has done so well? Is it just the Nigel Farage effect? Because, you know, the soaring popularity really started as soon as he entered the fray at the last general election, or is it the chance for people to let off steam, or is there really a fundamental shift in British politics going on at the moment?
Well, I think it's probably a combination of all three. There's no question about it. That Nigel Farage could arguably be said to have been the most influential politician in the last 30 years. There's, you know, if you look at the situation of him as a European MP and what he's done since in terms of you know, Brexit and so forth, you know, he's extremely influential, no question about it. I would go so far as to say that. I think he's pretty charismatic as well. Certainly comes over as a politician that the people, for the most part, identify with. And you, with those two things together and the issues that I've mentioned with regard to the Conservatives, and there has not been, I would also say, the Conservatives have not shown enough clear blue water between them and the Labour Party, leading to the accusations of Nigel Farage of the Uni Party. You know, the fact is that the Conservatives, both local and central, in 2024, paid heavily, both in May and in July, for not having delivered on the sort of things that they indicated they would.
The latest electoral calculus polling has Reform UK on 360-plus seats at Westminster, and the Liberal Party a long way behind that, and the Conservatives dropping from 121 seats that you have at the minute to 22. I mean, surely that's existential, isn't it?
Well, you know, we're 4 years out from a general election here now. The fact is, the Labour government have got I think the leader, Kerry Badenoch, the other day described it as a super majority. It's certainly a huge majority in Parliament, and it seems to me that it's going to be unlikely that we're facing a general election beforehand. There is a lot of ground between, a lot of water to go under the bridge over the next four years, and we'll see how the situation pans. I've been long enough in politics to know that just because they've got good numbers at the moment, there's a lot could go wrong in the meantime for them. Although, you know, I don't discount what you're saying, and certainly if those numbers were to go forward, there are questions over the ongoing viability of a number of parties. But we know from experience that it's unlikely that just because that's what the opinion polls say at the moment, that that's necessary, it's going to be delivered in 4 years.
Can your leader, Kemi Badenoch, survive to fight the next general election, or do you think she'll be gone by then?
Well, I think she's made a pretty good start to go with. But again, it's, you know, I would be foolish to put out hostages to fortune as to whether anyone is likely to survive the next 4 years. Lots can go wrong, lots can go right. And I certainly wouldn't want to put up a hostage to fortune at this stage, especially against the background of, what have we got, 4 conservative leaders in the last 5 years or something? It's I wouldn't be, certainly over the last 8 years anyway. So against that background, I'm certainly not sticking up any hostages to fortune. I will see how it goes. Certainly, Kemi has my full support. And you know, from time to time, her office contact me for information relating to local politics in Kent, and I'm happy to supply such info as they wish.
Local government reorganisation is on the way, but just for those who have not be following this, Kent County Council will cease to exist, as will all the other 13 elected councils in the county. And then they'll be replaced by a smaller number of much larger unitary authorities. Harry, do you support those changes? You know, do you think they'd be good for Kent? Do you think it'll streamline things, make it more efficient?
Well, I'll say as follows, that the devolution and mayoral authority is worth looking at, and together with local government reorganisation, I think the process in itself is could be of advantage, and in particular, I look forward to it strengthening the tier below, the town council and the parish councils. I see this as an opportunity for representation at that level to become advantageous, and for the franchise for such councils to be spread across the whole of Kent. I think that's, I come from a, as I've said earlier, a parish council background, and as I said, a former vice chairman of the Kent Association of Local Councils countywide. And I think there are opportunities there for representation closer to the people, and town councils and parish councils to be formed that aren't there at the moment. That said, I want to be very clear on this, Simon. That said, I am not yet convinced that what is being proposed by the government, by the Labour government, is in any way likely to come about. I am not yet convinced that there is sufficient funding coming forward for the financing of this. You've got to bear in mind, you know, Kent County Council has debts of £750 million. It's probably closer to 730,000, but we're very close to £750 million there. And assets which are not liquid, assets against it, some of which are not liquid, at around the 425, 450 million level. And that has to be financed. And I'm not at all convinced that the current format, 3/4 unitary councils, is going to be viable. Especially in East Kent, I can see the West Kent Tier 2 authorities at the moment forming up with Tunbridge Morling, Tunbridge Wells, Seven Oaks and Maidstone, and pushing a case with the minister to say that we've got things going. But if you look at Mid and North Kent, and in particular East Kent, the council tax base there, the viability of that, I'm not at all convinced that these are sustainable, and particularly at the 4 unitaries. And if you ask me, you know, Harry, can you see Nigel Farage agreeing to give up control of KCC for what might be a devolution and 3 unitaries? My answer is probably not. What's the advantage, as far as he's concerned, in giving up control of something he already has in hand for 3 birds in the bush?
Yeah. Finally, and briefly, Harry, if you would, can the Conservatives bounce back at County Hall?
Yes. No question.
Well, thank you for your succinct answer. Harry, thank you very much indeed for your time today, and I hope to see you at County Hall soon.
Thank you.
The government has run into trouble after more than 130 of its own MPs signed an amendment that would give them the chance to vote on a proposal to reject plans to cut disability and sickness benefits. This is part of a bid to save £5 billion a year by the year 2030. What do you think of this situation then, Rob? Is it really dangerous for the government?
I think it's probably, there's been a lot of situations where people have said this is a big challenge for the government and this is a big, stumbling block. I think this is actually the first really genuine one of a massive cohort of their own MPs, because Labour have this huge majority. It's not insignificant that this many MPs have decided this is what they're going to step up and complain about. So I think this is really a very big problem for the government. From what I've sort of been hearing, people are reporting, is that the government has been keeping a hard line and saying, no, we're not going to change, but that might be starting to weaken as they fully accept the scale of the amount of MPs. Mm. Apparently, even MPs who had signed this amendment didn't realise how many of them there were going to be, because the sort of lobbying behind the scenes has been quite covert to stop the government from scaring people out of signing.
How much of this is to do with these MPs just trying to protect their own backs? Many of them will be sitting on wafer-thin majorities.
I think that's certainly going to be an element of it. They can probably argue that the longer-term damage of voting against the government, but in the favour of their local constituencies, will be better for them in the long term, in the sense of they might, not get promoted into the cabinet or, a junior ministerial position. But as you say, they won't have, when it comes to the next general election, leaflets going around saying this MP voted for this thing which you don't, like. So I definitely think there will be some element of self-preservation. But many equally just fundamentally disagree with the change in policy.
Mm. Well, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? They're in a tight spot here, the government, because on one hand, you've got all these MPs rebelling. There's certainly a lot of truth in them protecting their majorities. But the hard truth, I suppose, is that Labour have inherited a massive black hole in the public finances. And, at some point, someone's going to have to say, we just can't afford to do all these things, and we do. The NHS costs an absolute bomb. The whole welfare bill is out of this world in terms of its scale. I think you've got some insight on that, Simon, and a story you're working on as well, about the number of people of working age in Kent who are not in the workforce.
Well, there's some kinds of papers due to go before one of the committees next week, and it basically says that 21% of working age population in Kent aren't working, which amounts to 204,000 people. That's one-tenth of the entire population of Kent, of any age, retired, toddlers or whatever. Everybody in Kent, 10% aren't actually working. It seems ridiculous to me.
It seems crazy. You've got to be really careful. I was found when you start talking about benefits, because you'll have the people on the right of politics who'll be saying, get on your bike and go look for a job, as Norman Tebbit said back in the 80s. Not everybody has a bike to get on. Some people are starting off from a very poor position and they're never going to get on life no matter what. Equally, I think it was Bill Clinton who said that benefits should be a safety net, not a way of life.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things about what this report has shown is this has been compiled by Kent County Council at the behest of the government, so it is official. Basically, there are certain things that, people are getting older. If they get older in an economically deprived area, the chances are someone who doesn't live in the area will have to go and care for them, puts them out of the workplace, and often in some places, in certain more deprived areas, there's a mismatch between the skills set needed and the vacancies that exist. So it's a whole combination of different things. It's just not people sort of, people being lazy. There are reasons for it. From what I've been told, anyway, this is not unusual for other parts of the country as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. The complexities of trying to sort this out are immense. I don't envy the government on this one, because, as I say, they're in a real tight spot.
I think the fact that they U-turned on the winter fuel allowance changes will really be sort of an argument in favour of the rebellion. But I think that makes it more difficult for the government to change, because obviously they expend that extra funding on the winter fuel allowance, and now there's even less money that they've got to, try and find savings in. So I think if they hadn't have gone back on those winter fuel allowance changes, we might have seen the government more lenient and more likely to change. But It's difficult to say.
Yeah. And throw into the mix there, Rob, 5% of GDP on defence, which they've got to find from somewhere as well. Mm. It's just...
people are saying that, you know, tax rises are almost inevitable in the autumn.
Yeah, and, you know, how's that going to go down? Because as a nation, we're paying the highest rate of tax since the Second World War. Yeah. You know, how much more can people afford to pay?
Yeah, for things that don't work properly. That's another for another day, perhaps. Okay, folks, that's your lot for this week. Thanks to Rob and Matt for their contributions. Don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage. You can sign up for our politics briefing newsletter by visiting kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.